All right. So I have no relationships to disclose. I want to start off by giving you a little bit of a background on obesity and disability. How many in here know somebody personally with a disability? If we think about limited in major life activities like going to school, working, or abilities to do things like seeing, hearing, walking, thinking, by show of hands. Almost everybody in here knows somebody with a disability. So disability is a very present part of our community, but we don't often think about it as we think about promoting health. But indeed, people with disabilities can be and should be as healthy as the rest of the population, the general population. About 20% of our nation has a disability. That's 1 in 5 people, and cumulatively, that's about 54 million Americans. So we're talking about a very sizable portion of our population. Unfortunately, people with disabilities are at increased risk for weight gain and obesity. They have lower socioeconomic status and lower physical activity rates, so they are at greater risk. We have strong evidence of a negative health impact for excess weight, increasing risk for all sorts of different health problems. I don't need to alert you all to this, but obviously hypertension, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and innumerable musculoskeletal problems, and the list does go on. We have national prevalence data on obesity for people with disabilities from the National Health Interview Survey and the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. And that data shows consistently that we've got a significantly higher rate of obesity among people with disabilities than without. I want to point out, though, that the data that I've currently got are only based on self-report, and we have a paper that's going under review in November where we're looking at the discrepancy between, we all know when you ask people about their weight, they're going to underreport their weight and overreport their height, which has a significant effect on BMI, and our data suggest that that discrepancy is even greater for wheelchair users. So then the errors are even larger. So this data, I will posit to you, is probably substantially lower than if we were to actually look at measured height and weight data using BMI. People with disabilities face the impact of functional limitations due to their disability, plus they are at increased risk for chronic conditions due to increased weight. So really they're experiencing a double whammy, and we really need to try and prevent that from happening. Evidence, we have national evidence from a variety of surveys, although I'm only citing one, national surveys that people with disabilities experience significantly more chronic conditions than those without disabilities. And we have evidence that people with disabilities tend to acquire these conditions about 10 years earlier than the general population. And I want to point out that people with disabilities' life expectancy is approximating that of the general population. People are now literally living a full life with disability. And they are dying of things generally unrelated to the disability and related to chronic conditions. They're dying of all the same things the rest of Americans are. Heart disease, cancer, stroke, that sort of thing. Obviously, defining obesity by BMI categories has limitations. Most notably, it's just looking at the relationship between height and weight, and it does not consider body composition. So we need to start looking at body composition because we know it's a better predictor of disease risk, which is really what we're interested in. So it's important to evaluate the body composition of those with disabilities, especially with people with the most severe mobility impairment, because we know when we look at across disability, people with mobility impairment have the highest rates of obesity. So we really want to be looking at it among wheelchair users who also experience changes in their body composition. So the purpose of the study I'm presenting today is to examine whether body composition differs between wheelchair users and an age, sex, height, and weight match sample from NHANES data, where we've taken those measures. So the data I'm presenting to you today comes out of a larger randomized controlled trial that I'll present the results on tomorrow, where in that trial it's assessing the effectiveness of a multi-component, behaviorally based exercise program to promote exercise among wheelchair users. And it's happened, I'm at the University of Texas now, but this study happened in the Kansas City metro area at the University of Kansas and University of Kansas Medical Center. So we brought people in, we took a subsample of our wheelchair users, and when we brought them in for fitness testing and collected that, we directly measured their height and weight. We also put them in the DEXA scanner to look at body composition. And then we are selected an age matched and sex matched and height and weight match sample from N. Haynes across waves from 1999 to 2004, who had had DEXA scans at a mobile exam unit. So we're gonna, we've got height and weight data, BMI data. We also collected waist circumference around the umbilicus by people while they were seated. And then the DEXA scan provides bone mineral content, which is indicated in my next slide as BMC. We're looking at their lean mass, fat mass, total mass, and then percent body fat of total percent body fat, and then regionally, arms, legs, and trunk. This is, most wheelchair users only have their weight assessed at a healthcare facility because these type of accessible scares are not common, so we obviously had one. And unfortunately, a lot of medical facilities do not have these. So when we asked our sample, how long has it been? If I asked in here, I mean, we're on traveling, probably the hotels, unless you carry your own scale, don't have it, but it's probably been in the last week that you've all weighed yourself. The average time since people had weighed themselves in our study for the full sample was 18 months. And we had one woman who went through her entire pregnancy and didn't know her weight until she went to deliver at the hospital. So, all right, and then this is what we used to measure their height. Rather than relying on self-reported height, we laid them down and used this device, which actually my husband built because you can't go find these devices. And we just put their head at one end, feet at the other, and then stretch it out to measure their height. Okay, so I wanted to show you the obesity data from our sample because, as I told you, the data we have for people with disabilities is based on self-report. We, in our sample of 128, the large sample, nearly half have obesity, okay? And when we look by obesity class, 14% are in the extreme obesity. So we have a much higher rate of obesity and extreme obesity in this sample. And this is a limited, anybody who, because it was a home-based exercise program, for safety reasons, if anybody's BMI was 50 or higher, they were excluded. So it's sort of a ceiling effect of who can be in this study. So I just wanted to give you a headset of who is in the full sample. All right, so when we've got the data on the NHANES and WOW, the matching worked. On average, their age, that's given to you in months, but their age was about 46 for the NHANES sample and 47 for our sample. They are, more than half of them are women in both samples, and the majority are white with some African American and Hispanic representation in both samples. For the sample that I'm presenting, the body scan, the DEXA data, body composition data, about 42% have spinal cord injury. Another almost third have cerebral palsy or spina bifida, both of which are those you're born with. Many folks with a whole variety of other causes, but some folks with MS and post-polio. On average, this is a community-dwelling wheelchair-using sample. They had, on average, lived with their disability for 25 years. Okay, so long-term wheelchair users. So here are the data, and I'm sorry, this is the matching data for height, weight, BMI, and waist circumference. We can see that they were adequately matched, although our wheelchair-using sample had a slightly higher weight. It was not significant, but there was not significant differences on BMI or waist circumference either. So I'm now going to turn and look at the specific body composition data. What did we see? For total bone mineral content, there is no significant difference, which is good news. When we looked at the total lean mass, again, no significant difference. But when we look at total fat, there was a significant difference between the general population sample and wheelchair users, with wheelchair users having significantly greater fat mass. When we add it with the lean mass, their total mass, it is not significantly different. But then when we look at the percent of total body fat, we see significant differences between the groups. There's not a significant difference in the arm mass. Wheelchair users are using their arms to propel themselves, so they've got good, the fat distribution is similar between groups. However, we see a significant difference in the leg fat mass and also a significant difference in the trunk fat mass. And this is where the adiposity in the trunk is actually a dangerous location for adiposity and increases risk for all sorts of cardiovascular problems. I just wanted to also point out some data that we had. This is separating just the wheelchair-using sample, what their percent body fat is by weight category for both the men and the women. And you can see, and I want to point out to you, for the men who are normal weight, their average percent body fat is nearly 29%. The cutoff for general guideline for men is anything above 25%. You're in the obese range. So again, this is our normal weight wheelchair-using men. And for the women, they were nearly 46%. And the cutoff for obesity body percent body fat is 32. So the striking theme of these data are even at normal weights, the percent body fat is indicative of obesity. This is very concerning. So we may want to consider whether we should move the BMI cut points to indicate disease, you know, for disease risk to be more appropriate for this population. So, in conclusion, compared to age, sex, height, and weight matched peers, the wheelchair-using sample had significantly higher fat mass, percent body fat, and percent fat in trunk and legs. Additionally, even those in the normal weight ranges showed percent body fat typical of obese individuals. Excess adiposity may be also related to the earlier onset of weight-related chronic conditions. This may be contributing to why we're seeing some of these health problems about 10 years earlier. So it's really imperative that we design and test weight control programs for those with disabilities. We have very little evidence on what works in this population. But we also need to assure that our current public health weight control programs be inclusive of people with disabilities. And we need to assure the efforts focus both on weight loss for those who have excess weight as well as preventing weight gain for those who are at normal weight. Thank you.